tune in to Turn On the News daily from 313.9.org. You can go to newsroom.313.9.org for links to anything you might hear here, including links to international radio art, radio news, media news, links, and more. Go to 313.9 and newsroom.313.9.org for everything you want to know about transmission arts. And to hear Turn On the News daily. I'm Tom Rowan. You're listening to Television, and specifically the Video Freaks Collective, V-I-D-E-O-F-R-E-E-X Freaks, a countercultural video collective from 1969 to 1978, first based in Manhattan and then later based in Lanesville, New York, and Greene County, New York, upstate in the Catskills, founded by David Court, Curtis Ratcliffe, and Perry Teasdale. And now, filmmaker John Nealon is putting together a documentary about the influential video freaks who started the what they claim is the first pirate television station in the country in Lanesville, New York, and Greene County in the early 70s. They have all kinds of video footage from Abbie Hoffman to the Black Panthers and Lanesville, New York residents in the early 70s as well, who participated in what became a sort of community television station and later a model for public television's open access. So first we'll hear a bit of a trailer for the Video Freaks documentary, and then an interview with John Nealon about his documentary about the Video Freaks Collective.
And we started looking for a place where we could all live together to save money.
At first we were looked on with a little bit of suspicion. You know, the hippies from New York, they're weird, they're going to have like orgies, they're going to make all of our children drug addicts.
People hadn't been doing this before because it was illegal.
Lanesville TV is back on the air.
For us, it was a chance to play and to experiment.
Here we are, back behind the Lanesville TV news buggy.
It built trust. There was a lot of bonding.
Hi, Mark.
Howie. How are you, Pix?
Good, good, good.
Did you give birth this year?
No, we got all small.
No.
It was wonderful because it hadn't been done before. It was, like, so exciting.
The second piece of Lanesville news is Frankie Benjamin's accident.
So if anybody has any messages, they should call us up at 7084. Birthdays, special announcements, any lost dogs.
We were living for the moment. We weren't thinking about selling anything at all, except selling the notion that the sky's the limit in terms of experiment and change and making the world into a better place.
Now with me via Skype is filmmaker John Nealon, who is doing a putting together a video documentary about video freaks and up on Kickstarter, has a Kickstarter campaign to raise the money to put out, get the film together. And why don't I let John, I'm sure you can do a much better job describing the process. John, are you there?
Sure. Yeah, I'm here. Thanks so much for having me on. Yeah, we're doing a Kickstarter campaign to help raise funds to finish a film that we're producing about the Video Freaks. The Video Freaks were a collective, a video collective. They were together from 1969 till about 1977.
In the Catskills.
A large part of their story, main part of their story, takes place in the Catskills. They originally came together doing a pilot television program for CBS. They were tasked with getting into the counterculture. At the time, this is 1969, and the mainstream media was not really covering it in the best way. So they found some people who were not in the mainstream media. A bunch of young people who were using Portapak portable video cameras, which was a new thing at the time, actually, a brand new technology that the television networks were not using at all, kind of revolutionary in many ways. And the video freaks came together to, you know, working for CBS. They created a pilot, which CBS did not pick up, a little too progressive in many ways. And yet they stayed together as a collective, making videos, documenting the movements at the time. We're talking about the height of the anti-war movement and feminist movements and Black Power movements, and the video freaks were right in the center of it. And the way that story comes to the Catskills was that after a while of living in New York in Soho in the middle of the chaos, they left the city as a group, as a large group, and they all came up. There were about 10 in the group at the time, and they moved to Lanesville, as I'm sure you know where that is. And they rented a large, like a rooming house, and they set up shop in Lanesville.
And is here where they claim to have set up the country's first pirate TV station?
Yep. And what happened was they lived there for a little while, and they kind of just as a progression of their own art moved into the broadcasting, and they set up a pirate television station. With a transmitter and with, you know, equipment that you can't really go to the store and buy equipment that will let you start your own television station, especially not in 1971, 1972. So they were really on the vanguard of technology, and they had a piece of equipment that was actually purchased with money given to them by Abby Hoffman, originally with the intent of creating some sort of disruptive broadcasts down in the city, but they changed its purpose and created Lanesville TV. At the time, Lanesville could, you know, it's in a valley, couldn't really pick up any television stations, yet everybody had a TV in their house with, you know, candles on top or whatever. But what the video freaks did was they brought local, homegrown television to this small town. It was actually quite revolutionary, and it worked. There, people were picking it up on their broadcast. You know, Channel 3 Lanesville.
Do you know what the community reaction was like? Or did they start participating in the televisions?
Yeah, the community was I think at first, from my interviews with the Video Freaks members, at first they were not really accepted necessarily. It's a very tiny town. Here come, you know, 10 long hairs from the city, up in the rooming house, and I don't think they were at first embraced. Yet, once the TV station started, and once they really connected with these people, and that's really what happened, they really connected with the townspeople. They were quite accepted, and the people of Lanesville became the talent and the audience, cooking shows and fishing shows and one famous show about a local fight, like a fundraising boxing match, and kids shows, all kinds of things, by starring and for the local people of Lanesville. It's quite amazing, actually.
And this pirate TV station in the Catskills became the model for the public access television. Is that fair to say?
It's fair to say. It's a predecessor. Basically, what happened was it was really a model for low power television stations. What they were doing was illegal. It was against FCC regulations, but it wasn't immoral by any means. It was revolutionary. So what ended up happening was, in some ways, it served as a model to some FCC regulations that came along not soon after for setting up low-power television stations, just like Lanesville TV, all over the country. And then basically what happened, historically, is cable happened. And in many ways, these low-power television stations were the predecessor to public access, which, love it or hate it, it's pretty revolutionary concept in and of itself, and that is that people should be able to control what they see to a certain extent. And when a cable company comes to town, they have to give access to, you know, local media. And whether that's, you know, people doing their own thing or whether it's just town meetings and things like that, it's, you're not going to see that on NBC, put it to you that way. It's revolutionary in its own way. And Lanesville TV was the forerunner to all of that.
And we're talking to John Nealon, a filmmaker who's making a video documentary about the Video Freaks, a Catskills-based pirate television collective from the early 70s. And John, I guess you've been going through a lot of old tape?
Yep. I first learned about the story. I had a film that was part of the Woodstock Film Festival, and I showed it at a screening in Saugerties, actually, one night. And I was approached by a friendly audience member who turned out to be one of the Video Freaks, Bart Friedman. He's a filmmaker, video maker who lives in Saugerties. And he told me and my wife and filmmaking partner the story of the Video Freaks, how they came together as part of CBS and how they were in the middle of it all and started the TV station. And it seemed like too great a tale not to be a part of. And so not soon after that, we started to look at some of their tapes. And we're kind of blown away, actually. There's an immediacy to this footage that is unexpected. You see a lot of footage from the late 60s on, you know, Woodstock and all those things. But it has a very distanced feel. And you start watching some of these tapes that the Video Freaks make, and it feels like you've just gone on a time machine and woken up in 1969. There's just a real immediacy to it all. It's hard to really explain unless you see it. And we were captured by it. The other part of the story is that around the same time, it was being the tapes were being kind of collected up, and it was revealed that a lot of these tapes had been sitting around in various Video Freaks attics and basements for all that time. And unfortunately, there's a lot of degradation that happened to these tapes, and that's a part of the restoring these tapes is a priority for the Video Freaks and for us as filmmakers and for Video Data Bank, which is an organization in Chicago that's helping facilitate the restoration of the archive. There's hundreds of tapes, and they just have little labels on them that say, you know, could say anything, because you can't, you know, it's not like film. You can't hold it up to the light and see what it looks like. It's videotape. And so you got to go by what was written on the outside of the box, which isn't always accurate, and nor is it comprehensive. So it's pretty interesting as these tapes get restored to see what's actually there.
And I guess restoring the tapes is part of the Kickstarter campaign. We should probably give that information out. Where can people go if they want more information about this Kickstarter campaign to raise money to get this to save these tapes and to put out this documentary?
Yeah, so we're doing right now, we're in the middle of a Kickstarter campaign to save the tapes and to finish the production. We've done, most of the production is done. It's essentially interviews. We have a few more to go. And the bulk of this money that we're raising will go towards saving tapes, as many as we can. We've been doing it for about a week. We got 30 days to raise $15,000. We're hitting 50% as we speak, so we've had a good first week, but we're still nervous. We won't make it, so we're looking for as much support as we can get. You can go to Kickstarter.com and search on Video Freaks, and our project will come up. Video Freaks is all one word, VIDEOFREEX. It's the Video Freaks' own copyrighted spelling of the word. Oh, it's not really a word, it's their own word. So you got to remember it's EEX. You can also go to videofreaks.com, which is a website for the film, and there's a link right on the front of that you can go right to the Kickstarter campaign.
I think there's a Wikipedia page too somewhere.
Wikipedia, yeah. If you search on Video Freaks in Google, you'll come up with lots of stuff.
All sorts of things, yes.
Yeah, all sorts of things. There's been books written. Perry Teasdale wrote a great book.
We should tell folks he's locally. He's still the editor of the Columbia paper. Used to be the editor of the Independent in Columbia County, and was the editor of several papers on the Greene County side before that. And he was one of the members.
Yeah, he was one of the founding members of the Video Freaks. It wouldn't have happened without him. And he wrote a great book, and that will pop up when you Google Video Freaks. And that's actually one of the rewards that we're giving out as part of the campaign. It's kind of like our own PBS fundraiser. We have a bunch of rewards for different pledge levels. Basically, the way Kickstarter works is that for films or other independent artistic and design projects, the makers like us put the idea out there, and we are asking – it's almost like pre-buying things. We have rewards, and there's things like the DVD, which obviously doesn't exist yet. It will exist when we're done with the film, and you can pre-buy it if you – donate $35 to the project, you will get a DVD back. And there's other things. We have buttons. We have a tote bag, Perry's book, another one of the Video Freaks, Nancy Kane. She also wrote a memoir. That's one of the rewards. There's a bunch of things that you can check out, and I hope people do.
And is there any hope of a reunion, or are they have they worked together recently, or is this just archival, this project?
No, in fact, there will be kind of a reunion happening this fall with the School of Visual Arts and the Paley Center in New York are going to do a little bit of a retrospective of Video Freaks' work, and we'll probably be a part of that, showing some pieces of the film in whatever state it is at that point. We most likely won't be done with the film, but we'll have something to show, and we'll hopefully be a part of that reunion retrospective celebration, whatever they're going to call it. And that's, I think, in it's going to be at the end of October, beginning of November. So that's exciting. So it's funny, you know, here we are, however many years later, and this previously little known story is getting a little bit of a revival. It's interesting. It's exciting for us, and I hope it's exciting for all the Video Freaks. It's an inspiring story to me. I find it very inspiring. Here were this group of artists finding their own way and really forging their own path at a time when there were no precedents to what they were doing. And they weren't doing it to make money. They weren't trying to be rich. They were, you know, searching for their own art in video and providing a service to the community and just living life. And that's kind of exciting and inspiring.
Do you think the project has been influential to later generations of video artists or pirates or...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think so. And I think in ways that people don't even know. I think that they were part of this kind of the early video movement informed a lot of what came later. Not only Video Freaks, but some of the other groups. A lot of people worked in groups back then. The Rain Dance and some other collectives in New York and around the country. And a lot of people came together for a few projects called TV in the 70s. And that kind of freewheeling video with a real perspective, kind of first person, it's hard to really put your finger on it and put it in a nutshell. But the spirit of what they did and what other video collectives were doing lives on. And you can see it in the work of Michael Moore, and a lot of other filmmakers are informed by that work, and a lot of people are who don't even know it, like anything that has a cultural, you know, history. We don't even understand how these influences work. But when you peel the onion back, and you see and you find these stories like the Video Freaks, and you see that they were kind of doing their own thing. They were there. There was nobody showing them how to use a Portapak. There was nobody showing them how to build a pirate television station. When you peel the history back and you find these seeds, that you realize, okay, this is where something started.
You want to give the Kickstarter information one more time?
Yes. It is kickstarter.com, and you look for Video Freaks, VideoFreex, or go to www.videofreaks.com and get the link.
All right, we've been talking to John Nealon, who's putting together a film documentary about the Catskill Pirate Television Collective Video Freaks. And he's got 30 more days to raise funds.
Until we have 23 more days.
Until June 29th, I see. Yes.
Yep.
So go to Kickstarter.com for more information and search Video Freaks online. Thanks a lot, John, for calling in.
Thanks, Tom. Appreciate it.
All right. Now behind us we hear Man Forever, the side band, the side project, the drumming project, I guess, of Kid Millions, the drummer for the rock band Oneida. It's a kind of a multi-drummer tone situation, as you can hear. 3103.9's FM outlet in upstate New York, WGXC, will have a live webcast of Man Forever on June 24th, live from the Spotty Dog Books and Ale. We also have one this Saturday, June 9th, featuring Woods and Black Puss, which is Brian Chippendale from Lightning Bolt. Many other interesting webcasts available for free through 3103.9 at WGXC. Listen to a little Man Forever. This is their new video, Eternity. The video is by Nick Chatfield Taylor and is online at imposemagazine.com, probably other places.
Just,
I knew you wouldn't.
You don't.
You should have.
You shouldn't do
you
that.
You just can't, can you?
Well, you didn't.
Did you have to?
You.
I could have.
I really didn't have to.
I
should have.
I'm
sorry.
All right, this is time you're listening to Turn on the News. That last track was Katie McMurrin, You and I, from Deep Wireless 8, and also before Man Forever, which we're hearing again underneath, we heard Elements of Time from Ian Jarvis. Both those tracks were from Deep Wireless 8, a radio art compilation from Toronto. Right, next up, Wired magazine has a new series, Legends of Electronic Music. I'm not sure if Gita Dial is writing all of them, or she at least takes the first one. Todd Dockstotter. Read just the beginning of here. In the 1940s, before magnetic tape was widely available in the United States, electronic music pioneer Todd Dockstader made lo-fi recordings set on steel wire. Quote, I love the idea of the wire singing, Dockstader said in a recent interview with Wired. As a high school student in the 40s, he used the end of a lit cigarette to make splices in the thin wire in a painstaking and risky process. Quote, you had to tie the wire, which was very fine, in a perfect square knot, unquote, he explained. He would hold the wire up to his nose with the cigarette perched in his mouth. A single wrong move and the edit could be destroyed. Quote, I became very adept at editing, unquote, he said. I really liked editing. I understood it. To me, it was really basic stuff. You could make decisions, take things out, put things in. I liked that you were building something, unquote. You can read all about Todd Dockstader at Wired.com and look for the Legends of Electronic Music series. We're going to listen to a little of his Ariel song now from an anthology of noise and electronic music. This is Todd Dockstader on Turn on the News.
7, push button heaven, capturing memories from afar.
Goodness, that's like writing on a chalkboard. But before that was Dymaxion with Chasing Transistor Radio and the Beach Boys with That's Why God Made Radio. Next up, we're going to Staten Island, where this past weekend at least 100 folks or so showed up at a shopping center parking lot between a Lowe's and a Kohl's. They parked their cars and walked around the corner behind a 10-foot wall on the other side of a dead end street alley on the parking lot. They all pressed. Well, let's let the video tell the story. This is from a group called Improv Everywhere. It was a project produced by Improv Everywhere as part of the Guggenheim Museum exhibition Still Spotting New York City. It's called Car Alarm Symphony on Turn on the News.
Thanks, everybody, for coming out. Today's mission is called Car Alarm Symphony. All 100 of us are going to park our cars in a shopping center here in Staten Island, and then at the exact same second, we're going to, like an orchestra, set them all off by pressing the panic or horn button on our keyless remote. This parking lot, there's a concrete wall on one side of it. On the other side of this wall, I found a dead end. We're all going to park our cars in the lot, and then we're going to exit the parking lot, walk all the way around the stores. We're going to go to this dead end, and we're all going to clump together like an orchestra. I'll conduct you guys, and we'll press our buttons at the same time. I'm going to actually conduct you, so we'll just do some people at a time, okay? Here you guys. Okay, you guys. Okay, you guys. Do you need to start moving somewhere to get a little closer? Just to make sure. Okay, yeah. You think you don't have it? You're good?
I have no idea how long I have.
Try to remember how many times you pressed it. All right, now let's see if we can start working to turn it off. Yeah, I think we're trying to stop. Everybody try to hit lock or unlock to stop. Thank you.
Hi, Deborah. How are you?
All right, I'm Tim. You're listening to Turn On the News. And before that, we heard the group Improv Everywhere at their Car Alarm Symphony from Staten Island last weekend. And then Wendy Mae Chambers with New York, New York on Car Alarm, Car Horns, excuse me. And just then, we were hearing a collaboration between Michelle Rosenberg and Howard Huang and the group Lovid. And we're featuring and talking about the group duo Lovid, which is Telly Hinkus and Kyle Lapidus. They're a mostly visual group, but they also engage the sound and light spectrums. And on June 7th and June 9th of 2012, they're debuting their new mobile phone app, iParade, and that's what we're hearing in the background here, the sound part of the iParade app. It's a 2011 Rhizome commission, and the first major piece in their new Locative Media Art Series. It uses GPS data to access video, sound, and stories available only in specific spots within the Hamilton Heights neighborhood of Harlem in Manhattan. They call it an experimental locative cinema or locative video, a cinema and video that offers, quote, offers a new option using GPS and mobile media technology, unquote. And they have two special events in conjunction with this app release, June 7th, 7 p.m., and June 9th at 4 and 7 p.m. in the Hamilton Heights neighborhood at 1619 Amsterdam Avenue at West 140th Street. You can go to rhizome.org. They're covering and sponsoring this project, and or search for Lovid's iParade at the iTunes Plays or whatever. So this is the sound of the iTunes app, and we heard that last track, Ring in the New, from Lovid and Michelle Rosenberg and Howard Huang. And now let's hear, to take us out of Turn On the News for tonight, a bit of a live performance from Lovid from the Free 103.9 Gallery and Performance Space from December 21st, 2004 on Turn On the News, Lovid.
rocking my stunner shades and turning up my radio. I'll turn up my radio.
Support comes from support for
United Airlines. United provides
support for NPR
in cities like Boston, New York, and Washington, D.C.
Underwriting today is provided
United Airlines, Mother Nature, books and music.
Jutus, Juice Bar Blend, and by Whitney Farms, producers of a complete line of
publicradio.com. United provides just another way.
National Business Radio is rising.
National Public Radio.
National Business Radio
comes from
United Airlines,
Borders, Books, and Music.
Jutus, Juice Bar Blend.
United provides just another way.
National Business Radio is rising.
Public Radio.
National Public Radio.
Nonstop Business
Radio. .com.
Public Radio.
Nonstop Business.
Underwriting today is provided by Inktomi. That's Inktomi Scaling.
National Public Radio.
At inktomi.com.
National Public Radio.
National Public Radio. Nonstop Business
Radio.com.
National Public Radio. Nonstop Business
Radio. Should be tips,
public.
Soil amendments and mulches.com.
National Public Radio.
National Public Radio.
Nonstop Business
Radio.com.
Public radio.
Well, lots of pretty good news there. Thanks, Joe. That report brought to you by
NationalBusinessRadio.com.
Tune in to Turn on the News daily from 3103.9.org. You can go to newsroom.3103.9.org for links to anything you might hear here, including links to international radio art, radio news, media news, links, and more. Go to 3103.9 and newsroom.3103.9.org for everything you want to know about transmission arts. And to hear Turn on the News daily.
The preceding show was produced by Free 103.9 at the WGXC Studios in New York.